Welcome to Around the Reel with your hosts, Aaron Carlson, Charles Lawson, and Samantha Hanna. Ah, shit. Here we go again.
Oh, it's showtime. You know what I mean? Showtime.
Well, actually, I was being funny by shaking everything, but I caught my heel underneath my ball, and then I rolled off, and I took the microphone with me. So it was a lot funnier than I thought it was going to be.
Well, I did see it, but I didn't record that part.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
It's okay, neither did I.
But it's right here forever. In my memory. Sure.
Burning
the memory banks.
Hey.
How are you guys?
Good.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Hello.
Yeah. Good to see you. Look at you guys all set up. Got the light behind your camera. No joke.
We're filmmakers. What's the deal?
That's fucking right? Badass.
Yep,
it's
I
awesome.
Feel it.
It's awesome.
Super cool.
Yeah. I like your feathery.
Would you guys like us to record the conversation on our phone too, in case the Zoom audio is not that great?
You sound good now. I think.
Yeah,
we'll be
I
fine.
Think we'll be okay.
You guys are fine.
It's yeah. Oh, excuse yeah. me, excuse yeah. me, Mr. Filmmaker. I'm trying to talk to the other filmmaker.
What filmmaker?
I think
you're
doing a backup recording audio is a brilliant idea.
Oh, I trust.
That's what I thought.
But it is a good idea.
But I trust the process.
Oh.
You trust the process?
I always do. All the time. No, it's fine. You can do it. You can do
either
it
either way.
You can do it if you want.
So you guys have options.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's. We like options.
Problem is, right? We're already on the show, so people are going to miss the first minute and 42 seconds.
Always live?
Well, no, because you can always go back.
I can fix
okay.
We are not okay. live.
It's live because we don't edit anything.
You edit stuff.
Around the Reel is performed in front of a live canned audience.
Yes, I add in the canned
Your
audience.
Discretion is advised. What you hear may be considered explicit in many cultures, including but not limited to Americans, anybody who has an opinion, anybody who believes in cancel culture. They don't like us. We don't care. We keep talking anyway because people are either going to laugh, frown, or talk about us one way or another. And there's no such thing as bad publicity. We all know this because we're in the fucking entertainment industry. Welcome, team.
and on that note, welcome to Around
welcome
the Reel.
Welcome to Around the Reel. Thank you.
Welcome That's to Around the Reel.
Great introduction there.
You know what's funny?
I hope you guys listened to a show before you came on.
Oh, they have. I thought you were tired, Chuck.
Well, remember the whole shake and get ready thing that you didn't record?
Yes. That helped.
That worked.
Fair enough. All right, let's move on.
Hey, it's as good as a Red Bull, right?
Well, no, because the Red Bull lasts longer because I might crash or I might realize I got a concussion when I did all that shaking and fell on the ground.
Exactly. Like 15 minutes in the show, guys, if he's super quiet, there's a reason.
Yeah, something happened.
All right, let's get on with it. So thank you for joining us.
Yes, we're super excited.
Yeah, super pleasure to have you. If you guys don't mind, why don't you introduce yourselves to the audience and we'll get started.
Okay.
That sounds like a plan. So, my name is Daniel Lear, and this is...
Bayou Bennett.
And we're a husband and wife writer-director team, and we've been working together since we met in a vegetarian cafe on the Lower East Side in 2007.
Awesome.
Won't hold that against you. Please continue.
and, you know, we had a dream together. You know, we wanted to change the world through filmmaking, so we've been... you know, building and building and building. And we're really proud of ourselves. I feel like we love the body of work that we've been able to create. And we've been able to work with some amazing people, you know, from Norman Reedus to Mark Ruffalo to Michelle Pfeiffer to Coldplay and some really amazing people. And we're just super blessed. And we're blessed to be here with you guys here today.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for coming. Wow. Guys, that's fucking
exciting. Aaron, we're in the same conversation as, you know, somebody who's been fun to be with, like Norman Reedus. There you go.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. And no, I love it. I love that stuff. See, this is what it's all about, because they said a bunch of keywords. They named off some cool actors that we all know. Then they talked about dreams, and I love that shit. And you guys know I love that shit. And they did it together, which is what we do as well. So we've got a lot in common. So this is fucking cool. So thank you guys for doing
it. Yeah, very, very fun.
All right.
Aaron and I have been together for 18 years doing this.
Yes, we sure have.
Aaron and I have been together for 33, fuck, shit, carry the 2 minus 4.
Yeah,
yeah, something 30-something.
Then there was that time that they don't count. 30 years?
30 years.
But you guys are together. You're like besties.
Besties. Don't say that, Sam.
Don't fuck with the bromance.
Damn, sorry.
All right. So there's a lot going on here. So you guys said something right there that I want to just jump into right now, if that's okay. And it was changing the world with your vision. What do you mean by that?
So, well, you know how a lot, some films are like, we got this problem and we've got this problem and we've got this problem. And by the end of it, you're like, I want to go see a therapist because we've got so many problems. But in our films, we've got problems, but then we show solutions, or we find a message that we can talk about that we believe in and then push it out in the world where it might change somebody's point of view. So like that's something, or help them in some way. So that's kind of what I mean.
Okay. Remember the 80s, man, when you watched the movie and you like really, really identified with the characters and you just wanted to watch the film again and again because it like really spoke to you.
Oh yeah.
Aaron's all over that.
Yeah. I'm the 80s guy. I'm that dude right now. Totally, yeah. You always felt satisfied at the end. You know what I mean? It helped you get to that point where you're like, the heroes are real.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
I do too. I do too. Yeah. That might be the name of the show. I don't know. That's pretty
heroes
cool.
Are real.
Yeah. And that was for me. Holy shit.
The name for the show comes up while we talk. There's no thinking about it. You know, we just like, oh, that's a keyword.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just improv. We just roll with it and see what kind of fun stuff we come up with.
It's super cool. I love doing this show with you guys. Yeah, I love it. I always have since we started.
And I want to say I'm very excited about your guys' aspect that you want to change in people's perspectives and everything, but I'm sorry, I like steak. I love you both. I don't know you very well. I look forward to getting to know you more, but I like steak. And you know,
you might change my perspective because I'm not really a huge fan.
I know, she's not.
Well, she does love her carbs, so.
Yes, she does.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you guys met back in the day, and I want to get into that because that's kind of fun. So I know how Sam and I met, and I know what happened when we met. She couldn't get enough of me. It was great.
Oh,
it was
awesome. It was great.
But we're not going to talk about that right now. That we're going to talk about you guys. So you guys are at this. Did you say it was a vegan restaurant?
It was a vegetarian cafe. Ludlow in New York City.
Okay,
oh, in New York.
And, you know, New York is a changing landscape, so it's not there anymore, but we still feel the spirit around that spot. You know?
Okay.
So we got married in a community garden, like about 5-minute walk from there.
Oh.
So.
And my family's from Louisiana, so they came and did like, do you know what a second line is from like the parades? It's like they have music and you have umbrellas and well, anyway. So we stopped New York traffic for sure. People were hanging out the windows and we literally went from the community garden to the place that we met, which was at this health food place that we had the reception at. It was incredible.
Wow. That is so fun.
No, that's fun.
That's
but
very fun.
I want to get into the, like how you guys met. So where were you at? Like Daniel, where were you? Were you chilling at the bar, or were you ordering? And then she came up behind you. How did it all go down?
Were you getting a wheatgrass shake?
I want to know what's up.
What were we doing?
Inquiring minds want to know the details.
That's the fun stuff. That's the fun stuff.
Yeah, I was. The Lower East Side is just this really cool place where you can just walk around and you just feel like you want to just write a script because of the kind of people you run into and the places that you're seeing. And it's just like life in New York. I feel is just unfolding in front of your face. And so I was always walking around Ludlow. And I would go to this place, Earth Matters, and I was sitting there with my veggie dog, and this cool girl comes out of this yoga class. She's holding a yoga mat, and there's only one seat available. And so, you know, she asked if she could sit next to me, and she sat down.
Wow.
And we just had so much in common, like so much in common.
Super and then cool. I put Daniel Lear, editor, on my phone.
She thought I was going to edit her film. She
thought
she was
going to
edit her documentary.
Okay, so that was going to be my next.
If I flirt with him, he'll do some shit for me.
Okay, so you guys immediately started talking about movies and stuff and connected right away.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's cool.
All right, that's cool shit.
And then the next day I was in a dance troupe and then I went to Egypt and we performed and then I flew from Egypt to Jordan, Amman, and I taught filmmaking over there and I was a professor of filmmaking. I was in New York as a professor too at the Parsons New School. So that I was like busy. And then he's like, I'm like in Egypt. And then I get this email and he's like, you know, making a joke. And I'm just kind of like a girl in action running, you know, doing my thing. And then I'm like, wow, this guy's funny. And then when he came back, I'd say it was like a proper 6-month courtship.
That's awesome. That's a great story. I love that.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's very sweet. And see, Sam, when I met Sam, it was at a bar. And we ended up doing shots like fucking Indiana Jones and Marion in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
He
like,
barely kept up with me.
She was Marion from Raiders. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? This girl is fucking no joke. And we just kicked it from there. But it was really funny. I was just like, it always reminds me of Indiana Jones. Every time. Yep.
It's kind of funny when you're a filmmaker and everything reminds you of one movie that you saw every somewhere. So, or a movie you want to make. Yeah. One of the two.
Yeah. That's good.
Now, to be fair, they didn't have the whole, you know, so many things in common like the two of you did.
Mm-mm. Oh, no. Aaron's like,
I have a dream of making movies. And Sam's like, I've seen a movie.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she saw the camera in my room, like you got set up behind it. And she
I thought he made pornos.
Yeah, she thought weird stuff.
What kind of movies are they that you make?
She was, he was transferring files. You know, he was editing.
It was set up in his room on a tripod, like what you guys got behind you.
That's where the computer. That's where the bedroom's where the magic happens. That just came out wrong.
It did.
Or right. I don't know.
It's okay. Well, remember, we had DV tapes back then in our cameras when we were doing it. So I had to use a cable to connect it to the fucking computer to transfer the footage from the tape to the computer. The camera was right there. That's what
I miss tapes. I really miss tapes.
I do too. And then if
do you miss losing tapes?
I don't miss losing tapes, but like you could put up a hard drive and then like you had a backup. Like with digital, you don't have a backup. It's kind of sketchy.
It can be, yes. But you know what was really scary?
To delete them.
I know, but you know what was really scary? When you would check footage, like when you're filming and you would rewind it and watch some of the footage you just made and you shot and you're like, okay, that's cool. And then you watch it again and then you stop it like midway and you forgot not to fast forward past it. And then you started the next shot and you recorded over what you did. I hate it.
Oh, yeah.
That's why you're not supposed to spend time on set looking at what you shot.
I know, but we didn't know that because we didn't know what the fuck we were doing, Chuck.
We've heard. So doing this podcast, we've been doing it almost we're going to be heading into our fifth year. We're going to be going into our fifth year in July.
Yeah.
But
congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you. We love it. But anyway, and during those years, we have heard so many stories, heartbreaking stories of people who lost footage whether it be from
or somebody took it and didn't give it back.
Just crazy.
I almost passed out once. That happened to him. No, seriously, I almost passed out. We filmed
That's what yoga causes.
It was crazy. Like, we filmed a film in the Philippines, and I don't know how much we should go into it.
Yeah.
You won't name names.
You don't want to film in a foreign country without, you know, every right to your hard drives. Let me just tell you that.
I believe it.
I came back without it, and I was like, okay, let's think of a movie where somebody almost passes out because something really, 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 really bad happens to him. Can you guys think of a film? That was me. I was like,
I'm dead. I am dead.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, that is scary.
That's freaking heartbreaking.
So scary. After like all that we put into this film, but fast forward to now, the film did play all over the world. It played during the pandemic. It's won over 33 awards and it's helped many people. It's on Amazon Prime. It's called Tombstone Pillow.
Beautiful. That's beautiful. Good for you.
I can't wait to watch that one. Yeah. We got to see Connection.
Yes, we watched that.
And I am so, you guys are so right up my alley.
So go ahead, Sam.
I have a.
Kick it off, Sam.
It reminds me of part of my movie that I have. I have a documentary out there called Giant Pacific Octopus. And you should watch it because it's right there. It's the same kind of message that you're trying to send. I love that.
About the
ocean. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's important. It's so important.
It's so important. It's so now. Yeah.
It's like people don't realize that, like, you know, 50 to 70% of the oxygen that we breathe right now is from the ocean.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Isn't that good?
It's ridiculous.
It is. It's vital that people, and I just think that, you know, I don't think people are, I don't think they mean to be as careless as they are. I just think they don't know. And so the more we educate those people and get them to understand what they're doing, I think the better we are, because then they'll think about it. I think the majority of people, if the majority of humans will think about it if they hear the kind of messages we're putting out there about the ocean and how we need to protect it.
Yeah, the interview we did with the oceanographer. What's her name? Come on.
Kelly Bushnell?
Bushnell. when she talked about just normal people just look at this body of water and just look at it and say, it's water.
It's just water.
That's all they know. They don't think past that. They don't understand what's underneath that surface or what's going on with that body of water that pretty much lives this planet. I mean, because it fuels everything. It's so crazy. And I remember interviewing her with you guys. And when she said that, I got like goosebumps. That scared the shit out of me. Because I was that guy. I look at it and I'm like, it's just fucking water.
And I'm not doing anything with that water. I don't care about it.
Yeah, I can't even drink that water, you know? But you have no idea because we're idiots. People are idiots.
And I don't want to spoil anything, but it reminds me of the lighter in your short. The lighter part.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, because, you know, people don't, they don't realize.
Yeah. It's crazy.
I'm glad you brought that. It's interesting that you brought that up because we haven't gotten to talk about that yet. That was the one interaction. So she's a girl that she's an influencer. She's like trying to just make it the next big move happen, the next big money thing happen, and then she doesn't see anything but herself. And then as she goes on, she goes to the ocean and she experiences the nature, and then she experiences, you know, saving something. We're not going to talk about it here because I don't want to say too much about the movie.
No.
But that one part with the lighter is when she connected with another human being that was doing something that was not okay. And we just think throwing one lighter out the window, just one. But what if all billion of us threw one lighter out the window or out, you know, into our ocean? And what would that do? It would
Right, and they talk a lot about batteries because batteries are actually so awful, and people literally put. I don't know why, and I don't know how, and I don't know why you would ever think, oh, I'm going to go throw my battery in the water, but people do it, and there's so many batteries found out there, and that's so toxic to all those life forms and everything. So it's amazing, like just trying to teach people about that stuff and have them just be aware. Because but it's important. It's an important job.
Yeah.
That's what I think being a documentarian is, and telling a story, having a message that's important is like the best part of a movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I know. When I watched their short, I feel stupid because I make a lot of fiction stuff. I like horror movies and action movies. So that's what I usually make. Sam makes docs. Chuck's doing something with a little more deeper meaning. But I'm not in for the meaning. I want the excitement. I want the explosions and the gunfire and the blood and guts and cool guys like 80s stuff. You know, that's me. So when I watch something like you guys and see how beautiful it is, I'm like, Jesus Christ, I suck.
That's why I take you along the ride.
But you appreciated the other stuff.
I do. I love cinema. I love it. And you guys got some beautiful stuff. So go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you guys off. Go ahead.
Aaron, I think that's what's so cool about movies is that there is so many different types of stories and so many different kinds of worlds you can create, you know, and like every time, like a different day of the week is for like a different experience. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah. Like Bayou and I started off making a comedy. That was our first film we made together.
Oh, really?
We made a comedy Text Me, and it was about the, you know, social media generation, the digital natives who have like a declining ability to communicate in their life.
They do.
They met online and they went on a date and they were texting their friends during their whole date about the date. So,
you know,
but we were saying something even through comedy and through humor, we were saying something. Yeah. By the way, there's some crazy ass parrots around here in South Pasadena right now that are,
you hear them?
I don't know if you can hear them.
I hear a squeak
every once in a
while. I was about to ask, like, do you got birds or?
Yeah, we have the parrots. They escaped the zoo and multiplied.
Yeah, they formed a whole community.
They're not fucking around.
Oh, they're not yours. They're just neighbors.
Oh, no, they're birds. It's like Alfred Hitchcock birds. That's what the outsiders
are. Oh, shit.
That's so cool.
Holy crap.
How cool is that? I would love that.
Not me. I'm scared to
shit. I don't want to get pooped on.
Just make sure you grab a dummy bird off the skin.
So our first thing, Aaron, and guys, it was like a comedy, and we were making a comment about, you know, human communication, but we did it through humor. So I feel like any way you can cause people to think, but in a kind of disruptive, interesting way, like through comedy or through incredible visuals, that's what I think is so cool about movies. You could take people on an adventure and a journey that will change them. And the best movies, I feel like you don't feel like you're being
preached to.
Right?
Yeah, good.
Right.
You can blow up a guy, Aaron, and then people would be like, well, maybe I shouldn't blow up a guy.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. You know, I always rank on what fascinates me and in the movies that I write and end up directing and making. But, you know, it does mean something to me. That's what's weird. So, I mean, as filmmakers, I think it always means something to everybody and why they do what they do. I know why Sam does hers. I know why Chuck does his. I know why you guys do yours now. For me, it's the same thing. Even though I've got these big adventurous fantasy ideas in my head, it always comes down to one meaning. And I always remember where I really tapped into that. It was Reign of Fire, Chuck. It's Reign of Fire. I will never forget that movie and how Christian Bale stood up to that fucking dragon. And he looked that big on screen, and that thing is humongous, and he still faced it. You know, to me, that means, you know, no matter what the obstacle is, you know, you've got to have the balls to stand up and fight through that, right? I don't care if it's supernatural or whatever, and that's what I was drawn to, I guess, you know, just like the Rocky stories. I adore people overcoming the odds, if that makes sense. And I just do it in this fictional world. That's all I do.
No, and that's okay. It. That's okay, because some people see it better that
Sometimes.
Way.
I hope they do.
They get it better that way.
It's fun. You know,
some people are just, and we're very different. Aaron and I are very different. He's a fantasy world guy, and I'm a real world girl. I like real stuff, and so that's why I do documentaries, and he's just very much loves the fiction.
I do.
But it works. It's the same message we're telling the same... Actually, message
it's
in our movies.
It's pretty much similar. I was going to say the same thing. It is. So, did you guys connect that
ways.
Way with your feelings about why you wanted to make these movies?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that we weren't as specific at the beginning about the kinds of movies we wanted to make. You know?
Well, no, that's not true because I had gone to the. Well, sorry, I'm going to back up. I didn't mean to like edit them out.
No, he's like, bitch, I've had dreams.
Here's a crazy story. Like when I told you I went to Jordan Amman to teach, I had looked at my students there and I'm like, they're just like my students in New York, except they had to check our bus for a bomb underneath it, right? And
okay.
I'm like, what?
Airport security,
my 5-star hotel. Like we went on a field trip to do some shooting and we had security guards. So
filming, not shooting.
Filming. And the security guards around us. So I was thinking of like we gotta do something about an anti-war film in the Middle East, and Daniel had already written it. He had already written one about his own story. And so
That's crazy.
It was really crazy.
Huh. Oh, you know what's way crazier than that though? Is that Bayou lived on 11th Street in the East Village between B and C, and I lived there at the same time, but we didn't meet. And then we moved all around New York City. And then finally she lived on Norfolk Street. And then I lived on Suffolk Street, which are parallel streets. And then we finally met.
That's crazy. It's we have a similar one of those
story.
Too.
Really?
Yeah, we
sorry,
do.
Sorry, Chuck, I'm sorry that we're leaving you out of this
conversation.
I know,
sorry,
right now,
Chuck.
But this is like
great. Yeah, I've been in relationships too. This is where he puts in the crickets.
In post, you know, when I edit this show.
No, we ended up, the house I grew up in, the house my grandfather built, he ended up being in and staying in and house sitting for the same, in the same house.
Same
we
just, house.
We missed each other for so long.
Yeah, we didn't even know each other. And then later she's like, oh, my grandpa built a house. I was like, bull fucking shit. No way. I was like, I stayed there for a while. I know this house. And that's like one of those things. That's so weird, guys.
Nobody knows that house like I do.
See, and this is why I like fiction, because you some of this stuff really does happen.
It does,
it happens.
No, it
like
does.
That's like a fucking magical story that way you guys connected and bonded that way. That's
cool.
Crazy.
It's really
that's
cool.
Crazy. Huh.
You guys should write a script and do a movie.
Nope, they're filmmakers. Okay, I gotta ask you guys some stuff about like the technical things on the films that you guys are doing, because I peeked at everything and you guys got a hell of a cinematographer. I'll tell you that right now. It's beautiful work. Beautiful. Beautiful stuff. So you guys have been doing this for a while. How did you build up this team to start making these things? Because you guys got some really pretty stuff. I mean, it looks gorgeous.
It sounds great. It looks great.
All
of it. It's awesome.
You guys, thank you very, very much. And I highly appreciate that. What was so challenging, though, about making this film is that we were filming in very different locations like India, Africa, Ghana, Africa, Pakistan, like right at the base of the Himalayas, Hong Kong, Los Angeles. So we had to somehow, because we are in such a tight timeline on that film, we couldn't fly to those different countries.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to find creators that we could really, really expertly guide through storyboards and WhatsApp and, you know, texting, you know, location pictures back and forth and casting pictures back and forth. And we had to really, really control the visual quality of the film through a lot of pre-visualization.
Okay.
And I think that's what was so cool about it, is to kind of like use like this curating taste to kind of like find the best creators you can possibly find and study their work, and then figure out, as working with a colorist, how all the cameras could work together so seamlessly. So it was a really cool challenge.
That's so cool.
No, that's fucking
brilliant. What you're saying is the editor was what was amazing.
Actually, which is you, Daniel, right?
Daniel's editor, but I would say it's a combined, and that's a really good question, because it's a combined top level of every department.
I got
like you. Just as you guys mm-hmm. know, as filmmakers, I mean, I'm you know, our goal is A-list, you know, feature film, like, you know, someday. And so what is it that makes that A-list film? It's the best acting, the best cinematography, the best editing, the best color grading, the best script, obviously, you have to start with. So when you're on the script, you're that person's God. And then when you're directing, when the actors, that's God. And then you have the editor, and that's God. So hopefully everybody's at the top of their game. And so, like, what we've done throughout the years is we have gathered those people and those, you know, the top cinematographers at their game. Like Byron Warner was the one of was a cinematographer. He's amazing. He's directed.
He's shot videos for Coldplay. He shot videos for Shakira. He's shot, you know, videos for One Republic. Like a lot of really cool music videos, because we like music videos because we like to see the world in a not standard way.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like,
and me
sort
too.
Of like
yeah,
hyper visual language.
Yeah.
So we're actually a mixture between you two, Sam and Aaron, because like we do, it's a documentary and it's sci-fi.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Yeah, so we had a documentary, and Chuck, I'm sorry, I don't want to leave you out.
Yeah, sorry, Chuck.
Chuck, you're just
somewhere. Chuck, you're somewhere in the film. Too, probably. Joking aside, but it's like what we did do, very storyboarded, as Daniel said, and very, very exact, because we were controlling, you know, different teams between four different countries.
That's crazy.
And not only that, we were finding things that were documentary, like when we shot in the sweatshops in India, it was actually a sweatshop. Like we actually got our crew to fly to another
nobody would allow them to film in a sweatshop in India, right. So they had to go to a very remote village do that work.
Wow.
So it's kind of eye-opening, because you know, we had gone into the film thinking certain things, but then in the process of making the film, we're like, oh my God, there's no more child labor in India in these sweatshops, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
More harmful chemical dyes allowed. And then in Africa, like the kind of insane plastic pollution where you'd see a river completely covered in plastic.
Yeah.
That was like, they had to scout for 5 days to find something to cut.
Oh, well, that's good. That's not a bad thing.
Awesome. I mean,
yeah, but yeah, you're fucking up my movie.
I know. We got,
you just take a couple empty bottles and throw them in there, get the shot, pull them out.
Yeah. Wow.
No, the plastic that we did use, for example, in the beach scenes was plastic we had found on scouts on the beach. And so we used that in the film. So everyone carried a metal water bottle on our sets, and they were happy to do that. They were psyched to be green in making this film. We took every possible approach to making a green film, and we had never done that before. It's hard enough to make a film, but then to make a green film, you know, the following the green protocols was a good challenge.
That's awesome.
You know, back to your first question, we used the almost exact same crew on this film as on our previous film, because we believe that once you find people you love to
their
work
family
with and you really believe in them, stick to that crew.
That's what we've kind of done, is we've built a family here on just doing this show.
Yeah.
This show helps us find the right creators that we know will bond and work with well. And we end up working with them, making something. And next thing you know,
it's a family.
We're a team.
It's
how we audition people.
Yeah. Kind of, I mean, in a way, we have met a ton of great people that we don't work with necessarily, but they're great.
Yeah.
And we would work with them, and we want to work with them. It's just not as easy all the time.
Correct.
Where like if they live in California
exactly,
or New York
or somewhere
fucking
else,
UK.
Exactly.
It's always hard when they don't live close. But
I really like the strategy there that you guys did, you know, having, you know, four different locations, because I watched your movie I'm thinking, okay, some of this has got to be stock footage, right? How do they get a sweatshop? Do they have that kind of budget to build this set to and get all these actors to do this? No. So that's what I'm thinking. But literally, somebody found that.
Impressive. So
and filmed
cool.
that for you guys
so
that
cool.
you connected with and saw their work and knew they could get it done. And they did it. And you guys did that as a collaborative team. That's fucking brilliant.
That's amazing.
Thank you, Aaron. You know what? And there's like the beauty of the global village on this planet is like, you know, a guy reached out to us from Pakistan and he's like, I love your guys' work. Could you possibly mentor me? And we're like, let's check out your work.
Yeah.
And like that, I think that was an early seed on this film because we saw what he filmed in Hunza Valley, Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, oh my God.
Wow.
Like, you were impressed with it?
This is how we want that part of the film to look.
Oh, nice.
In this kind of location. So
it was like, a storybook area. Like where it's like, you're like, is that real? It was all real. No visual effects.
Wow.
Holy shit. Okay, so I'm going to be bluntly honest here, and this is how bad, like,
trigger warning.
Probably me and Sam and Chuck are, because we'd all think the same thing. Whenever I get an email from someone who's out of the country, I don't really take it too seriously, if that makes sense. And
most of them are like, we can make your website better. So
a lot of those are, yeah, we know that's bullshit. Whatever. You know, hey, do you want to get more hits on your podcast? Yeah, thanks.
But they were reaching out for.
But some of them do. And now I'm like, I need to go back through my DMs here. Right?
And see what you
Because who did I miss that's probably fucking talented as shit in this other country that I just blew off because I thought they were another scam? And I hate saying that, but you know what I mean, right?
No, it's true.
No, I know. You gotta be careful. You gotta be careful, but like at the same time, we have a family in India now.
Yeah.
We wanna work with there.
And that is so cool.
Like, you know, Afnan from Pakistan has kind of become like a brother, and now he's like working with us in our company.
So cool.
It's beautiful. You learn about cultures in the most intriguing way. Like, I would have never gone to Ghana, really,
right.
You know, but then, like, you meet people there and like you get to learn about them in a powerful way, right?
It's incredible. It's incredible. Like, I'm so impressed by this story and the work that you like.
Forget your movies. Just you guys doing this is more impressive.
It is.
I'm sorry, but when I
only say that
because
I didn't have time to watch it. I'm sorry. I got a second.
You're good, man. You'll watch it later.
I promise.
Yeah, you'll watch it after. You'll love it.
You'll see what I'm talking about.
You'll love it. You'll appreciate it more watching it now after.
Yeah, you can see the care they take.
Yeah, it's just incredible. And the work that you did, because I myself also thought, I wonder if any of this is stock footage. That's the first thing that came to my mind. Because we use it. I mean, sometimes when you can't get what you need, you do use it. And it's fine. Mm-hmm. And no judgment there, but for you guys to go through the work that you went through to get the actual footage, to me, is so impressive and incredible.
It makes it better, right?
Wow.
It makes it so much better.
Yeah. It does.
You know what, Sam and Aaron and Chuck, like what we were trying to do the whole time is that, you know how when you're making a movie, you hold up like this example, right? And this is like what I'm trying to do visually or story-wise or character-wise or whatever.
Yep.
Byron and I, when we visited Austin like several years ago, we saw this movie called Samsara, which is basically, it's shot over 5 years in all these different continents.
Oh, wow.
And it just has these really amazing human experiences. And that's kind of like what we always held up is like, is this image like Samsara? Is it that level? And if it's not, then we need to reshoot.
Like, we actually had to reshoot the Africa footage because there was two other kids. They were adorable, but the one girl, she just stuck out to her. She's like, she's the star. And then we actually reshot that. So it was kind of like we kept going to that level. It's not this level. It's not that level. Okay, it is that level. We're fine. Let's move on. You know, and I really think storyboards really helped us get connect the different worlds. And I wanted to do a lot of match cuts. And I wanted, you know, I had all these ideas before. Yeah. And we actually pre-shot the scene of her opening up the the fast fashion rack and then seeing the what's behind the fast fashion.
There was a lot of that where we would get some footage from some country and then we'd be like, okay, so now when we do this day on the studio on the stage, we really like had to match it exactly.
Right. And then we shot it. We actually, because I do some, I'm like the one actor that's not an actor that has the biggest reel. I don't know what it is. I just do. So anyway, we pre-shot it. So we went to Target and we did the scenes. And
On
the cell phone. And then
we did like scenes that way. We edited them, shot them, and showed them to the cinematographer.
So they could go match what you guys shot
the
cell phones.
Yeah, because Bayou, like, we wanted to see if the scenes worked. We wanted to see how they played out. So we actually filmed, like, three scenes in their entirety with Bayou acting, and I'm just filming on my mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then we edited them and we're like, this really works, or this doesn't work, and how can we change it, or how can we explore with the camera? And then when we actually came to production day, we're like, oh yeah, we know exactly what we're doing.
Right.
I love it.
It's almost like what Disney does when they do the animations for the whole entire movie, and then they go out and film exactly what they did in their like pre-res animation stuff or whatever. It's brilliant, dude.
Well, Aaron, actually tell me if you love Robert Rodriguez, because we do.
Oh,
and
fuck,
we admire this guy so much. But we learned what's called video storyboards from him on what was that movie? Desperado.
Yeah.
He did pre-shoot scenes, you know, with a video camera.
Yeah.
And that really gave him an idea. He called them video storyboards. And we're like, that's what we're going to implement in making this film.
And that makes more sense, because I was going to say, who did your storyboards for you? But if you're doing them that way, because I can't draw worth a shit. Chuck can't draw. Well, you used to be.
And we have an amazing artist now, but he takes too long.
Yeah, I don't want to overwork him. He's good. You don't want to fuck him up. Yeah. But no, that's brilliant. That's a brilliant idea. It is.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
I forgot about that, Chuck. We could do that.
Yeah, we'll start doing that now. Yeah. Thanks for the reminder, Daniel.
Yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
By the way, I'm just going to point out really quick, rather than save it for my outro, which I'll do later, but, you know, she really blew over it and kept talking after she said that the editor is the god, and that's the last one she mentioned. And, mm-hmm. Daniel, you said you're the editor, so your lady did refer to you also as god outside the bedroom. I don't know how everything rolls. I just wanted to put it up there in the universe that she thinks you're pretty amazing. Yeah. So there you go.
Thank you, baby. I love
you just
too,
wanted to point that out.
Funny enough, you guys, I did not edit this film.
No, you didn't edit.
I thought you did.
I'm the editor that's credited, but I really didn't edit the film because we pre-visualized the film so much.
I got you.
Oh, is he one of those? He doesn't take enough credit for his work.
You cut and paste beautifully.
I get it.
It was so laid out and pre-visualized that, you know, there was not that much editing. And it was very strange. I'm like, Bayou, this is supposed to be a lot harder. What's going wrong here?
Yeah.
Well, in the post-production.
No, that's good. That just means you did everything.
Yeah. It's all the pre-work you guys did. So that counts.
It does count. It does count.
We actually looked at the filmmaker we love named Gus Van Sant. He made this movie, Elephant.
A fucking Elephant, Sam. I love that movie, by the way.
It's an amazing movie. But he's like, you know what? I don't want to make a movie a Safeway anyway anymore. I don't want to just have like shot, reverse, like over the shoulder.
Yeah.
I don't want to say, he choreographed the whole movie in front of the camera. So there was almost like there's very little editing.
Yeah.
Because there's like 5 minute long scenes in that film. So I feel like early on we looked at Gus Van Sant and we're like, I got my son over here. He's making like a waffle or something.
Oh, you're fine. You're good. You're good. It's around the reel.
We can't hear him.
Yeah. No,
okay, it's a real show.
If he's burning the waffle, we can't smell it. So you're okay.
No.
About 10 or 15 minutes.
And he can come say
ago?
Hi if he wants
yeah.
to.
If you see any flames, it's not a visual effect.
Totally fine. We held this one off real quick, but I know Sam understands that the dog just almost shit his pants, I think, 10
dog
minutes ago.
Dog is farting. My dog is underneath farting.
And when we kept, you were talking and I'm sitting here like, Jesus Christ.
Okay, same.
Kept the show rolling.
We're obviously in the same room, and our dog is in here, and he does not smell good.
It's
today.
Around the reel. It's fine. This is a real show.
So, yeah, we got real stuff going on, and thank God you can't smell it.
Yes. Yeah. Don't scratch and sniff this show. We don't need you to do that.
Can you say that again? I really like that. Let's do a take two on that.
Don't scratch and sniff the show.
Yeah,
no.
Just don't scratch.
You don't
want to
smell our dog's farts.
Not at all. Not at all.
No,
good memory
farts.
For me. I like this. I love this.
Okay, so let's talk about some of your crew a little bit more, because I really really enjoyed the technical stuff that you guys pulled off in this. So your score, for example, who did the score for this? Because it's beautiful.
I love the score.
Yeah,
it's great.
Roman Molino Dunn. You should look him up. This guy is extremely prolific. And he is extremely creative, and he's great to work with as a film. He's very filmmaker friendly. We had a lot of challenges on making the score because the score had to be a huge character in the film, right, Bayou?
Yeah, it was a big part of our story. But I do say, so finally we showed him Tombstone Pole. I went back to that, our film, I guess some years back, but I said, okay, this is the what we want, and the character, that really was a character, I'd say. And so he was like, oh wow, and he got it. So
yeah, it was like we wanted a certain like a ethnic sound that like we didn't want to be like, oh, here's India, now you hear a sitar, or like here's, you know,
right, I get
we
it
wanted to feel like it's all flowing together like a melting pot, but at the same time that you feel transported to these different countries through the soundtrack.
It was amazingly
done. Really, like, we wanted to be subtle, but at the same time, very unique and original with the Bobby and I were like Googling, okay, what kind of instruments do they play in Pakistan? Is that something we want? Okay, what about this instrument? It was really fun. Like, sometimes we have to become co-composers. I'm not trying to take Roman's credit because the guy is a genius.
Sure. No, I get it.
As a director, but you got to know what you like.
Yeah.
You have to be a composer to some extent, right. You know, to be able to learn how to talk to these composers because they're very educated, about music. And I'm very uneducated. I can't talk about, you know, all these Italian terms,
right?
But like, you have to learn. I feel like if you can learn to do every job there is on the set or in post-production and at least understand it really well, then you can be in control of it.
Absolutely.
So it's part, get what's in your head into the different jobs, but also pull the team in that you know that they can do the job that you're asking them to do. So
correct.
It's two-sided.
Yes, I agree.
Yep, absolutely. Well said. Yeah. Very well said.
For the longest time here, we finally have got other cinematographers helping us. I'm usually behind the camera when I'm
usually
out.
Usually does man of all trades, does everything.
But that was the thing. When we started this, you guys, I didn't know any better. I thought I needed to know how to make the whole movie. I had no clue. I've seen all the credits my whole life of all the people that did these movies. I just thought I had to figure out how to do them all.
But you know what? There's a lot of value in that, Aaron.
There is.
There's a lot of value in learning how to do all the jobs. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you become a much better filmmaker when you can have some experience and knowledge and, creativity in all those different areas.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like literally if I don't go listen to the sound person's sound through my own headphones and I don't check out what mics he's using and I just like, I'm like, oh, I'm just, you know, I just trust everyone. Like, it's not a good way to work.
Right.
I think a good director is really involved and they're very, very trusting and they're very collaborative, but they're also like checking out every single part of the film to make sure that it's really achieving the vision.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
And I agree with you to an extent. And then, but when you put that team together though, and you got those trustworthy people that you know that they know what you're looking for. And then it makes it easier. Cause I had somebody reach out to me not too long ago and said, hey, is it hard acting in a movie you're directing? It looks very hard. A lot of people say it's hard. And I'm like, no, because the fuckers I work with, I've worked with forever, they know me. They know what I need. They know what I'm looking for.
He could put me behind the camera. Basically,
yeah.
I'm not
Sam
at all
can do it.
A cinematographer.
Chuck can do it. Yeah.
But I know his vision. So I could go behind the camera and I can film him acting and I know exactly what he wants.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I know him. And so.
So it gets to a point to me, Daniel, where I like when Chuck does audio, I trust Chuck because I've edited his audio and done sound design on it many, many times. It's fabulous. He does perfect job. Perfect job. I don't double check your work. Yeah. And he's fucking
deaf. And he's deaf. He really
which is.
Is
crazy. But you know what's cool? His levels are so low that if I'm like, I can always boost it in post. That's better than spiking out, so we're fine. You know, you know what I mean? So you get to know each other
it's
as a
your
team.
Family and you rely on those people to get what you need to make your vision come alive.
Which makes the shooting more efficient, which makes things move smoother, which helps everybody, especially the actors. They don't have to wait around all day. You know, it kind of just works.
It's like a symphony. It's like a beautiful symphony when it all comes together and everyone just does their part.
Yeah.
And every instrument is important. It matters.
Yeah.
Every person's role matters.
Yeah. I like what you said though, you guys, about, you know, the score and how you got really involved in it. I'm not really into, I love music in the movie. That's the whole reason I got into this, right?
So yeah.
Music in movies is the whole thing. I was 80s kid. I watched Miami Vice. I'm you know,
exactly.
What am I going to do? You know what I mean?
Synthesizers are the best.
They were, you know, music makes it for me. Without music, it's shitty. It's stupid. Anyway, long story short, I respect musicians so much. I don't know how to do any of that stuff. I have no idea. So I give them an idea of what I'm hoping to achieve by the themes and the characters and whatnot, you know, and when you connect with a composer the way you guys did and are able to do that, that's exactly what it's about. Because I get like to the point where I want to just let them still, since they know me, they understand what I'm looking for. So then I just allow them to do their thing. Does that make sense? I want everybody to do their thing. So,
totally.
Yeah, but I do like that you guys had you know, an idea and how you were able to sell that and tell him what he needed to do and what you're looking for, those soft blends. So it wasn't like, you know, you're in Pakistan and you hear this and then you're over here and you hear this. I like that. That's fucking dope.
The blending.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. The score is absolutely.
No, that's beautiful directing, you guys.
Beautiful.
It really is. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I do. I just wanted you to know that because I don't do that. I'm like, just do your thing, bro. Give me some badass music.
But you're also not afraid to tell people that doesn't fucking work.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But how often have I done that? I don't think I have.
Well, because we found
you have a couple of times. I won't bring it up right now.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, we found.
Oh yeah.
Mostly found people that have known, that gotten to know us. What I loved so much about my composers, and I've had two of them, and they both have done the same thing, was to get to know me as a person, and that's so important because for them to know what I want, and they've both been able to pull off exactly what I want.
Yeah, they did.
Because they got to know me as a person, just me, nothing to do with the movie, but they would focus on me. And that's, I think, a tremendously good quality in a composer, especially because that getting to know you part is vital to pulling off the, you know, or being able to connect with you in that way.
Connection.
With a movie. Yeah, the connection.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and like we brought our good friend Zeph, who has a podcast called The Film Situation, to produce this film from New York because we just felt like there was a lot going on and it had to be done in a very very certain timeline. Mm-hmm. And then we just want to put like the best people in charge of any kind of production type work, you know, because you really have to lean on them. You know what I mean? Like we did something in the making of this film that was like where we had all of the time, we had permits and we had, you know, permission, but one place, like we just couldn't find a high rise in LA like they exist in New York. And we finally found one and it was absolutely incredible. But like the location owner was like, we really want you to film here, but we didn't have necessary permission from the building. So it was like an undercover operation to get like 15 people into that, 17th floor with all this equipment, like so much equipment. And it was like the sketchiest thing, but my friend Niger's like, Daniel, don't worry, just go up and
just do it.
Like, you think we're positive? Like, I'm like, that's awesome. I love it. He's like, and then I turn around and look and he's like, and we're like feeding off each other. But yeah.
I'm like, Niger, I'm gonna have a panic attack. He's like, Daniel, just go up there on the 17th floor. Don't even worry about it. I got you.
Sometimes you gotta steal shots. Sometimes you gotta.
Yeah, exactly. Like we had a permit on Laguna Beach because the lifeguard, the first thing they came up, do you have a permit?
Oh yeah.
So good thing we. So we're like filming over and saving the little animal that you guys know that we saved.
Yeah.
Okay. And then meanwhile, the beach is taking, it's like the water is taking away the beach, which has all of the expensive equipment. Does Zeph come over and tell us? No, he's from New York. He basically takes it and he moves it himself and grabs the lifeguards. He's like, you gotta help me. We didn't know about it till after the fact. So those are the people that you need to have your
back.
Totally.
And you didn't even know about it. That's even better.
Like when you do it right, you guys, and you surround yourself with like people that really believe in you and your vision and don't say no, but like, let's figure out how we can do it. Then at the end of it, you don't want the film to end, you know?
I know.
Every day is like this creative paradise.
Yeah.
And you portray that in your movie because like watching Connection, I didn't want it to end.
Yeah.
So you portray the same thing, you know, like it does go by too quick when you have everything in the right, you know, there's magic that happens.
Yeah. I want to follow that lead character and see what happens.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to keep following her. Like what is she going to do? How is it going to happen?
I want to see like what happens.
You guys. It's
like,
really, really good.
And that's what you want to do.
Yeah. Wow.
And you know what's kind of cool, you guys, is that Berit was actually pregnant during the making of the film.
Oh, that was real? Okay. I wondered.
We had to deal with something that we've never had to deal with, which is a pregnant woman going through a lot of physical changes.
Yeah.
And now she's a new mom. And it's like, there's like the film was born and then the baby was born. So it's cool.
Oh,
it was great. I mean, the pregnancy worked right in with the story.
That's
like
fucking cool.
Like it was meant to be. And I wondered about that. I was like, is that a belly like strapped on? I wondered.
That's impressive.
Because we want people to think, okay, well, it's not just me and what I do now, but what happens.
But what happens late? Yeah. I wondered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That we all are.
Everything is authentic.
Did you look for somebody who was pregnant, or did you just get lucky?
So Berit, okay. So I haven't even talked about our other favorite film, and in terms of sci-fi, Aaron, you would love it. It's called Time is Eternal. So it's
fantasy.
It's fantasy. Sorry, fantasy.
Oh, that's okay. Yep.
Okay, fantastic. it too, because it does have the beautiful ocean aspect. Sam, and I know Chuck, you would just absolutely love it. I'm just kidding.
I love all kinds of shit, so you're right.
I know, you would love it. Okay,
he does,
so
he does.
If Cleopatra or Mary Wollstonecraft, the 1700 writer, came and had a conversation, and what would they say?
We're reborn from history.
From history, and she found us right out of the pandemic. So guys, we're all locked up. We know, let's not go there. But it's at the end, and everybody's just finally getting released, and we're all, things are starting to be okay in our industry. And she's like, I've got this film. And she calls us, she's in another country, she's in Europe, and she's like, you guys are the right people for it. And we're like, okay, well, tell us about it. I'm like, I am the right person. Cleopatra, mermaids, like save the world, women empowerment, that's me. Daniel's like, yes. And then next thing you know, we're filming this incredible film. Like, it was like the most healing thing. And honestly, my message was, of course, women's empowerment, but what I wanted is when people watch this film, they forgot all about the pandemic, they forgot about all their problems, whatever it was, and they just sat there and they watched the film. So we ended up screening that film all over the world. It did win multiple awards, and La Jolla was like the biggest one. But I'm sitting there and I'm running and I'm doing a red carpet and I'm running. I've seen my film a million times. And I sit down and I'm sitting in the, and there's a big theater, you know, on the big screen. What was it? And
downtown. Is there Regal Cinema downtown LA?
So, and I'm like, somebody was trying to squash me. You know how things happen. It just, you know, you've got people running after you too sometimes as filmmakers. You know what I'm talking about, especially. And so I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my God. Like, the mermaid scene comes up on the huge screen. And I was like, I couldn't talk. I was like, it was so aesthetic, and it brought me to present time, and it made me just feel like this is the reason I make this film. I'm meant to do this for others, but it did it for me. So, okay, so long story short, Chuck, your question was, did we find Barit? So we ended up using her. We said on the next film, we said we know you'd be perfect for Connection, and we pitched her the idea, and there we are, and that's our recent film.
And then as a team, we went to Italy, you guys, when the film was done, and we did our first screening, which was really cool because some of the people at this festival in Italy were like
filmmakers' dream come true. Wait,
it was like Marissa Tomei was there and Terry Gilliam. We got to hang out with him in a vineyard.
Oh shit, dude, that's Time Bandits, bro.
Yeah.
Wow. Like guy, seriously,
talk about funny. You know, Chuck, this dude is so funny. Like, by you tell him about the dance he did on the dance floor.
Okay, I mean, first of all, he was sat with us for an hour and he talked to us about like all the things that happened.
Baron Munchausen.
Yeah.
How he lost like, I don't know, $10 million and had to make the film for $10 million less dollars or something.
But he
crazy
made, like, that made it more creative. And we were just like, I'm like pitching, I'm like, I'm in Italy, I'm eating cheese.
Is this real?
With this pop record. And then so at the end of the night, we're all dancing and it's getting wild, but he does, I can't even explain it, except it was like, he did this performance art. He's like, he bonded with Daniel and I. We got the picture, we got the Getty.
With Matt Dillon too.
Yeah, with Matt Dillon.
Like, Matt Dillon too?
Yeah, I'll send you the picture. It's what, like, we got it. I know, it was like man, a dream come.
Aaron's gonna go to film festivals now.
Ain't no rumble will rumble without me. That's Outsiders, baby. That's Matt Dillon, that's my man.
Outsiders is one of my favorite films of all time.
There you go, Danny.
Our mentor, Doug Claiborne, he produced Rumblefish, which came, I believe, right after.
Right after. Yes, it is. Yep. Huh? Yep. And I watched it just because of Matt Dillon. Yep.
But Bayou's still on the dance floor, though.
Oh, no, sorry. So okay, sorry. The dance floor, and then, like, he bonded with us. You know, we just love filmmaking. We love people. And all of a sudden, he does this performance. He's like, phew, and he did all these different things. And it was like, it was just me and him for a second. And he just did this thing. And then he disappears. I kid you not. It was most amazing. I'll never forget it. It's just,
and that fucker has an outro.
That's awesome. You guys are so inspiring. I love you guys.
I'm seriously
from start to finish. Right. Like, there's nothing I don't love about you guys.
Chuck, Sam, do you see the energy here? Do you understand what I'm saying? When you guys see me on set and I'm fucking being goofy and just being out there and I'm just so wired and I can feel it. It's because I feel that energy from everybody, you know.
Like, you make us want to go make a movie.
Feel that way. I feel that all the time. It just keeps pushing me and pushing me. You guys have that.
Yeah, big time. Big time. And it's magic. It's magic.
I feel connected to this amazing family over here. Because, like, you guys are amazing. This is the thing. Bai and I honestly believe that artists are, like, the most important people on this planet. And filmmakers are, like, I feel like that's the highest art. Because you're taking so many different arts and putting it into one thing, which is storytelling.
Yeah.
On this very high level. But, like, on Friday, we're going to do a talk at the LA Film School, And a lot of things that we do is like, we talk to young filmmakers about like how they can actually make a living at filmmaking.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
And I feel like that's so important because we don't want people to do filmmaking as like something they only do on the weekend or, you know, like I feel like they're, that's what's so cool about like, I feel Robert Rodriguez and Tarantino, they found a way to actually, you know, be filmmakers for real. And, and you know, I remember when Robert Rodriguez came out with that book, right? What was that called? Was
it? Well, there's also a 10-minute movie.
Yeah, he has a 10-minute film school.
Yeah, it's 10-minute film school. And he did Rebel Without a Crew.
Yeah, Rebel Without a Crew.
Yes.
Yeah.
The fact that they were regular people like us.
It's important, you guys. We got to make filmmaking not just a hobby, but like you can actually do it for a living if you have the right skill set.
Yeah, I agree.
Learn how to market and promote.
A day job should become nothing in this industry. And so our film is called The Art of Business. And we actually made
it. Art of the Film Business.
Art of the Film Business. Like Art of the Film Business. So we made an online course. And we're like really, it shows like, how do you get the job? How do you close a job? How do you get the money? How do you get, what do you do? Like how much money do you need to have monthly? It like helps you become not only a filmmaker, but financially literate, which we don't have in our colleges. And that's like really important to us. And so that's what we're pushing right now to help artists.
And it's a beautiful thing. And that's what I kind of preach, but I don't say it eloquently. I'm like, let's make some fucking movies that make money. That's all we got to do. That's all we got
to
do.
We just need to fucking do this.
Yeah,
people need more than that.
But there is a, I mean, it was called show business for a reason. It's still a business. Right. There's still a way. You know, and people don't think that. They're like, oh, you quit your job, Aaron? Because I quit my job recently to pursue this. That's what I'm doing, my day job. I got the fuck out of there. I've never been happy working for anybody else. I just can't do it.
Right.
And, you know, after you're making movies for 20 years, you realize that you have skill sets. There's things that I can do that I know are valuable to help others to make their films, to make ours. Cool. And there's got to be a way, right? There's got to be a way to transfer those skills to others and still earn an income to be able to pay your bills and live your life and still do what you love. I just believe it. I just believe it. No one can talk me out of it, brother.
I'll tell you why.
We're training this guy right now. Jordan, you want to come over here?
Oh, yeah. Come pop your head in. Hey.
Oh, what's up, Jordan? How you doing, brother? Look at you, man. Hi, buddy.
You getting into this stuff?
So Jordan is a director under training with us now. He comes on all of our sets.
Awesome.
He's been so
awesome. Yes. BTS.
The first film that
he played, you might appreciate this, Chuck, he played Little Freddy. That was his first role. Was it Wayford? No. His first role was 007, The Golden Diaper. He did a...
Oh, nice. Like,
and then he did Chucky. His last film was Chucky. He did a great job.
Good for you.
My grandson would absolutely adore you.
Hey, you gotta watch. You have to watch our Horrorverse on YouTube.
Yeah,
buddy. You need to watch our movies.
You
we made
like
a Shape
it.
Movie.
It would appear that episode one is a bit gory for monetization values, but the rest of them are really good.
Yeah, we got Michael, we got Jason, we got Freddy, we got them all.
And my grandson is two, and he watches them. So I mean, they're all right.
They're fun. Yeah, and Michael. You'd love it. You'd love it. Yeah, and me, because I got these cool dreads, and I got this big...
My grandson hates it.
And
hates
I got a patch. And I look like Snake Plissken. I'm cool.
As exciting as he's talking, and as much as you don't know who the fuck Snake Plissken is... Sorry, guys. Excuse me. I play Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, he's our Jason. He's our Jason.
Yeah.
You'd like it,
does.
Buddy.
He does.
Yeah.
So...
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Jordan, so much.
Nice to
meet
you, bro.
Thank you.
Great kid.
Nice meeting you, buddy.
He's no joke. I love him. I love him.
Nice.
We learned so much from him. You know, like you gotta, I think one of the things that we did early on with Text Me is that we brought in Matt Bennett, who then went on Nickelodeon's Victorious, as the guy who did the ventriloquist on that show.
Yeah.
He's really great.
Yeah.
But we brought him in to help write this script because we wanted to represent this like social media generation. And then with Jordan, we're learning about all these things about, you know, his culture.
How old is she?
He's eight.
But he's
eight?
Eight going on 15.
He watches 8-second movies. So,
yeah, 8-second movies is the thing. And then there's like a thing that's trending. And we're like, how did you see that? He's like, I don't know. I just saw it. And now it's like, you know, it's a whole other
world.
That's so amazing. Yeah, that's so cool. Because he's teaching you stuff too as you're teaching him. Yeah.
That's great.
That's great. That is awesome.
The beautiful thing about kids and having kids in your life and having them involved is the fact that as opposed to all of us adults who have learned to develop a freaking ego, kids have no problem saying, I don't know.
You can learn
so much from somebody opening their mouth and saying, I don't know. I might know things about certain things, but if somebody next to me says, I don't know, and they're talking to a professional that I didn't want to say I don't know to, mm-hmm. they start talking, I'm going to learn so much more.
True. So that's true.
I love kids being around because they'll say, I don't know. And then somebody will tell them.
Yep.
Well, my philosophy is you can learn lessons from anything and anybody, meaning anything, meaning any animal. You can learn lessons from animals. If you really pay attention to things, you can learn a lesson from anyone. And if you're open to that, you're a much better person.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, you're right.
That whole thing about like being able to learn something every day and being a constant learner. Like we were just in a seminar with one of our favorite music video directors, Dave Myers, who, you know, did the Higher Power Coldplay video and the cool ones from Missy Elliott and a lot of stuff. And he's like, I'm just learning every day. Like every production I'm learning.
Yeah.
He hit the top people. Like already in like 2003 or something. And then, you know, then YouTube came out and all these people were creating music videos and he stopped doing it. And then he came back and did that Kendrick Lamar amazing video. I forget the name of it, but it's like the fact that he says he's learning on every production, like it inspired me so much.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally get it. And going back to what you said earlier, the people that you see shooting or directing or both music videos are some of the best filmmakers, I think, to this day, visually. I totally agree. Everybody gives Zack Snyder so much shit, but that's where he started. Visually, that man's on another fucking level, and I don't care what anybody says. A genius visually telling the stories. It's unbelievable to me. So I totally agree with that, by the way.
They put up this billboard on Sunset. We were driving on Sunset the other day, and it said like, "What do you know?
Snyder did or something like that, or what was it?
Yeah, he's about to get more Snydery than Snyder's ever been.
Something like that. Yeah, I saw that. I respect that guy so much, and filmmakers like him. When you see him come up, and you're like, "Well, where did he come from all of a sudden? Or she? You know, where did they come from? And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, they were doing music videos, and you're like, "Oh, wow. What do you know?
David Fincher, too.
Yeah, you know, they got the flair, man.
Probably doing, you know, Madonna's Vogue video when he was like two or something.
Yeah. It's beautiful, man.
There's something to be said about someone who is that far in their life or in their career and can still be humble. I believe fully in that. Like, you can learn so much from those type of people.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't go to their head.
No. I think they're still kids deep down. I mean, we all are that want to make stories.
Yeah,
I honestly believe that. I know that's how I feel. I'm 51. I don't feel fucking 51.
Man, you look incredible. You look like you're like 28.
See what I'm saying? See that, Chuck?
Don't let that go to your head, Aaron.
I'm older than both of these fuckers.
It's called living your purpose.
It's the fucking hat. Take off the hat and show them what you look like me. And
why? Because I have,
oh yeah,
the receding hairline.
Dude, if I shave my head, I just don't have the.
Wait. But right now you don't have a shaved head. You have the stubble, so the wig stays on. So don't take off your hat. I know you don't want to. But yeah, he's got the stubble going because it helps the wig stay on for his character.
No, I'm just lazy. I don't want to shave my head every day. I can't do all that. I'm just lazy.
You know what?
You end up with a big scar like me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you know, you guys, we've all done a job that we don't want to do.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's really not fun. Like, you literally feel like you're
dying.
Dying.
Yeah, you do. So,
yes.
Yeah, yeah. So doing filmmaking and finding a way to make it a real living is like, you know, it's not an easy journey, but nothing worthwhile is.
No, exactly.
That's what
well put.
Same conversation we were having the other night, Sam. And I'm like, look, she was like, yeah, but you know, in a company, you can move up and stuff. Like, yeah, but how long does it take you to move up? It's no different than what we're doing now. You just got to keep moving up the ladder if it's filmmaking or if you're working at fucking Starbucks. It doesn't matter.
Well, he's had to teach me because I was raised in a family where you work for a living. You work for your living.
But
and if you
working.
Don't work, but it that's... It's a different kind of work, and it's hard for me to put it in that perspective. I've learned. He's taught me. But it took me a minute because to me it was like, no, you got to go out there and you got to dig and you got to, and I'm out there digging.
Yeah, or slinging drinks folding clothes or
the way I understood it, the way I was taught, you know, and some people are taught that way. And now I see it as sometimes those people will judge you as a filmmaker and say and think the same way I did, where that's not work or you're not working. But now I see the work that it is. It's a lot of work.
You're working nonstop all the time.
I
work more now than I did at the day job because I was, you know, when you get home from that and you're making dinner and you eat and then you sit down and you're like, fuck, I gotta go edit for an hour. And then I'm done. I don't got nothing left. But now I can edit for all day.
But not just that, but the importance, of it too, yeah. as well as the work that it takes to do it. The importance of it is also a thing that I didn't quite understand. But art is important. I mean, if you think about it, if the whole world goes crazy and everything goes to shit, what do we have that's beautiful? Oh,
and that's what Daniel was talking about earlier.
Art.
And the pandemic, where did everybody go? They went on to
art.
Movies.
Yes.
Music and that's where we went
to make them smile or feel something better than what was reality. And that, to me,
and as a filmmaker, I'd like to say thank you, Amazon, and thank you, Tubi TV, for that.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we did making this. Was we wanted all the artists to bring them all together in a way because the pandemic happened and we couldn't film.
Yeah,
with people. So we started our show. Started this, and we just wanted to bring artists together.
Yeah, we were stuck. We couldn't make anything either.
No, we couldn't. But we wanted to highlight the people that.
I think entertainment,
keeping us happy.
And, yeah, entertainment and art is. I mean, I hate saying it this way, but if you take your artist hat off and you think business wise, you've got one of the best products ever.
Well,
you know,
you
entertaining
do.
People and giving them smiles or emotion or triggering a cry out of them or disgust or a feel good moment or no matter what it is more valuable. Than something you're going to get off fucking Amazon. It's just, you know, if you order something and you get a cheap trill for 10, 15 minutes, and the next thing you know, that thing's sitting on the counter in a box in the garage. You know, a movie lasts forever. It just lasts forever. I saw films when I was fucking 4 years old that I remember to this day. How is that possible? I don't remember anything else. I remember the movie, though.
That's true to songs.
You know what I mean?
That's true
music
to...
Music, too.
That's true to paintings. Yeah. That's true to every art.
So selling that to an audience should be hella easier than anything else I've ever sold in my life. Why not do it?
Exactly. It's so true.
Done.
It's so
true. Yeah. Why not do it? You know, you got to look at it as a product sometimes.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound as cool as being an artist, but people don't take artists seriously. But when I approach somebody to back a film that we're working, you know, I'm excited about what we're selling.
But who's gone and passed and dead besides our relatives that we remember? Artists.
Yeah, we remember them all.
Artists.
They make it.
They make an impact on your life, whether they're here or not anymore.
They do.
But they still leave something behind, and that's art.
Yep.
And that's what is so beautiful.
Yep.
Pink Floyd. I mean, you just can go on and on about the people that impact this world with their art that are no longer here anymore, but their art is.
Yep.
And so it's timeless. It's actually timeless, and it's a beautiful thing.
And
it lasts forever.
And they had a fucking dream, and they pursued it, and they made it happen.
You guys, I feel completely rehabilitated. Like, I wasn't even feeling bad before, but I was feeling good before, but now I'm like, this is like the best thing that we could all possibly be doing with our lives. It's
awesome.
Just like so beautiful.
It is. It's a great thing. It makes me feel alive. I feel like I'm living.
Yeah.
When I do this.
And sometimes I think about it and I think, you know, one of these days I won't be here anymore. I mean, one of these days we all won't.
Right.
It's just the fact of life. But what am I leaving behind? What am I going to leave?
Physics.
Behind for generations to come? And I've been doing my ancestry stuff a lot lately and... really, really treasuring the stuff that my ancestors left behind. Ancestors I'll never know and I'll never meet, but they left something, a poem or something, for me to go back and read and connect with. And I connect with that stuff and it's like so cool. So I think that the best gift you can give.
You were bawling when you read that. You were crying your ass off.
No,
but it's true. My parents are musicians. I grew up with artists. They grew up in an art town. And I told my parents, it's not the place that's home for me. It's their music.
Yeah.
Their music is home for me. Like I grew up with their music. They're singing and they're playing the instruments. It's very important. It's like, it's everything.
It makes you warm inside, right? You feel it in here. Yeah. It's
when you lose an artist, you don't really lose them. Because you still have all of their beautiful art.
Goddamn right.
In one way or the other. Whether it's a painting or a recording of a song or whatever it is, you don't really lose an artist. Right. You don't really lose them. They'll always be there.
Look, my dad died when I was 15, right? I got one video clip about 8 seconds of him that somebody, because his buddy brought over a VHS camera that he just bought when they first came out. You know, one of those big ones. And he filmed him in the front yard. My dad's throwing football with me. And he looks at the camera and he goes like, that's all I got of my dad that's left on video I ever have. You know how much stuff my kids have? of me.
Everything. So much. Yeah.
On
they have more shit than they want to watch.
Yeah, okay. They won't, you know, but one day.
They might want not watch it now, matter. But later.
It might matter. And then those grandkids and everybody else. That's fucking cool.
It is.
That's fucking
it's
cool.
It's a legacy.
Yeah. So even if I didn't make a dime off any of this, I'd still be doing it. I'd still be doing it.
Yeah. And I mean, we might not know, you know, we might not remember certain people or certain things, but, you know, we know who Leonardo da Vinci is, don't we? And we know, you know.
We also know who Leonardo DiCaprio is, too.
Well, we know him, too, because they're both artists. And that's why we know them. So I think art is important, and it is impactful, and it's timeless. It really is timeless. And really, when things all go bad in the world, and COVID is a great example of that, art really stands out.
Yeah.
Because it's the one thing that puts a smile on your face that makes you happy, and it brings you back to this is why we're here, and this is why life is what it is. So whatever it is that you're doing, no matter what art that you're doing, it means something.
It's the purest thing you're gonna
find.
It is.
And it's a way of expression that you can always turn to.
I have a film that I was just sitting down, and you're talking about like the enduring power of an artist long after they're gone through their work. And I was watching that Danny Boyle movie yesterday about the Beatles.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Right? And it's like interesting because you made me think about Pink Floyd and the Beatles. It's like the Beatles aren't there anymore, but God, their presence is felt.
Always.
And then a movie about that very same thing, it like magnifies that so much. And I've actually seen that film before, but wow, that film is strong.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is.
What
was
the one we just watched on Netflix? Oh, the We Are the World one.
The We Are the World one?
Yes.
The documentary?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was bawling, dude. It killed me.
Amazing.
Yes. Right?
Yes, when how you all see those people came together. And
all
like,
these beautiful artists come together and
it
do this.
Really, it doesn't happen like that
And it was
like
a shit show.
Anymore.
Just like any other set. It was a fucking shit show and it was great. It's great. You can totally relate to them all, especially if you're doing what we're doing. You can totally
leave your ego at the door.
Leave your ego at the fucking door.
That is an awesome documentary. Right.
It's beautiful.
It is so great.
I loved it. Yeah. Man, you guys, okay.
And your documentary, as short as it was, and as much as I wish it was longer, was great too. And I love the message. I love the importance of the message.
Yeah, you guys got some great work.
Beautiful, so beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah, I'm gonna try to track down more of your guys' stuff and see it. If you've got anything you can direct us to, please. I would love to watch your work. You guys are doing great stuff.
Yeah, Dream Team Directors is an awesome place where you can see a lot of different things that we do. You know, from documentary to fiction.
What was it again? Say that again.
Dream Team Directors.
Your website. Okay.
They're plugging their website. So
let them go. You guys.
And, sorry.
But I think you guys would really get Tombstone Pillow. I don't know why I kept bringing it up at this interview, but I think because it's a mixture of documentary and narrative. And so was by the way, Sam. So was Connection. It's a narrative. We wrote it, but it's also got documentary aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both. Like some, I think that might be, maybe that's going to be one of our signature genres.
That's pretty cool. I like that idea. I love it. Well, please plug some of your stuff, guys. One more time.
Please do.
Saturday morning at the Regal Cinema in downtown LA. So we're really psyched to, like last time we showed it, there was like 40 minutes. People are like, this kid's like, you know what? Like this kid was like from South Central LA, like not a native environmentalist. But after he saw the film, he's like, you know what? I'm gonna like turn the faucet off when I'm brushing my teeth.
Hell yeah.
That's what he got out of the film, and I was like, that is awesome. Like that's awesome. You know what I mean? Like
see what
you're
saying?
Not using the lights, turn them
and
off.
The fact that you brush your teeth. Like no.
Yeah. Come on.
You know what's funny? I was gonna say it before we end the show, just real quick. Has anybody ever tried to brush your teeth with their non-dominant hand? Has anybody?
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you?
Oh yeah.
It's impossible. You're gonna kill yourself if you tried. I almost gagged myself a couple times. The toothbrush was up my ass. I'm like, what the fuck is it doing down there? I was all over the place.
Wow.
I couldn't do it. Anyway, on that note,
I hope that didn't really happen.
You guys are awesome. Thank you for being on our show today. Seriously.
I just want to say that being around your cinema family made us feel like connected in new ways to what we do. And like, I just feel that you feel blessed to do filmmaking. We feel blessed to do filmmaking. We feel blessed to share our stories with audiences. And I think there's nothing better than telling stories and like being a part of this emotional and visual sharing culture. It's really cool.
Yes, thank you so much, Daniel. That was well said. Beautifully said.
Man.
You guys have been awesome.
Yeah, great show. Hey, Chuck, how you feeling over there?
Yo.
You want to close this
out? I'm feeling pretty damn good. Now, usually I go on and I ramble as an outro, and I love to ramble on because I don't talk very much during the show. I'm a great fucking listener, which makes me great on set because I know when to shut the hell up and do my damn job. If you ever need somebody who's up here, you know, to help you out. But the more important thing I have to ask is, okay, so we have Daniel and we have Bayou. And now you keep referring to her as Bayou. So when you're leaving the fucking room, how does she know if you're saying goodbye or if you're just fucking talking to her and she's supposed to pay attention? Please explain that one to me. I don't understand.
Can you sit by me? Can I sit by you? I've heard that all my life. Can I sit by you? No, but it's from Louisiana.
No, I understand your name, but how does he know? How do you know if he's saying goodbye or if he's trying to get your attention because you're not listening to him?
Hey, bye.
Where can I buy you?
Bye, because he kept saying bye for you. He kept saying bye, referring to you as a short nickname. So I was thrown off the whole time. I thought he was fucking leaving, but he wasn't. He just kept referring to you. So anyway, this is how we end the show. I just ramble on and make people laugh. Sam slaps her head, and once she starts shaking it, I realize I've gone too far. Since I haven't gone too far yet, it's been an absolute pleasure having both of you on the show. I hope you guys have enjoyed yourselves as well. If you guys decide you want to travel up to Washington and come check out how we do it up here, we'd love to have you come visit. We'd love to have you on set. We'd love to hang out and have a conversation. Go get a cup of coffee or some fucking wheatgrass tea or whatever the hell you guys want to drink. I appreciate everybody who lives on this planet and how they live their lives. Why? Because I'm fucking insane and I think everybody deserves a shot or a second chance.
You're actually fucking brilliant if you think that way.
So everybody remember out there, think hard, because you're thinking anyway.
We'll see everybody later.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
For those of you that want to be a guest on Around the Reel, please email Sam at aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
Not Messenger. Do not message Aaron on Messenger because then he has to send you a message that says email Sam at aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereel253@gmail.com.
How come they can't just message me again?
Because nobody wants to fucking talk to you.
Can anybody reach out? That's an artist, filmmaker, actor.
If you're an artist of any kind, we want to hear from you.
But we are going to vet the crap out of you.
We don't care if you make millions of dollars in Hollywood or if you're just beginning your career in the art industry. We don't care. So everybody that wants to be on Around the Reel, yes, we want you.
That's AroundTheReel253@gmail.com.